17:30 UTC on Thursday, January 18th, and this is Zimbabwe Today.
This is a moment where they must speak out, where they must tell my administration what their challenges are.
That was Zimbabwe's president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, speaking to a youth forum. We'll have that story and more coming up. Good evening, I'm Kutunai Mutatwa.
And I'm Chido Njere on VOA Zimbabwe Today.
Ahead of his trip to the World Economic Forum in Switzerland next week, Zimbabwe's new president met with young Zimbabweans to hear some of their concerns. Reporter Kutai Zinawashe has the report.
President Emmerson Mnangagwa told those at a town hall meeting that now is the time for youth to speak up.
This is a moment where they must speak out, where they must tell my administration what their challenges are, what they would want us to do, what environment they would want my team to create for them. We are good listeners. I myself am a good listener and would want to listen. And with them, dialogue and say, this is where I want to go.
Ahead of his trip to the World Economic Forum in Davos next week, Mnangagwa asked Zimbabweans to look into the future with a common togetherness.
Every single Zimbabwean, in my view, has a role to play and is an important person to bring our nation forward. So my appeal is, let us look into the future. That is the only space we can improve. The future, not the past.
The World Economic Forum's Global Shapers in Zimbabwe community organized the president's inaugural town hall meeting. The goal, organizers say, is to allow the president to engage with younger citizens as the country begins to engage more fully with the world economy. But at this event, the president had time to take only a few questions from the young adults in the audience. Malvin Hunda, an entrepreneur, was there.
I think it was a very brilliant initiative, but I also feel that it was a lost opportunity in terms of setting an agenda. We took the opportunity for granted. We asked random questions. We could have spoken about tax incentives for young people. We could have spoken about financial support.
Hunda says, now that Zimbabwe is open for business to the world, he would like to see young people being fully part of the opportunities that will come with foreign investment. Tafadzwa Mabasa is a vendor, and he had reservations about the meeting. He is deaf, and his friend Sitabiso Ndlovu translated Mabasa's sign language.
I enjoyed the town hall meeting, but I wanted to ask a question and I did not have a chance to do it. But I guess next time we'll try and voice our concerns.
Mabasa had wanted to hear the government's plans to fully include deaf people in its processes and politics. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
Vateereri veStudio 7 tinoda kukuzivisai kuti tava nezvimwe zvirongwa zvakatanga zvatichange tichikupakurirai kubva na 6 a.m. kuseni kwega kwega na 2 p.m. masikati ega ega nechirongwa chenyu chamagaro ziva cha 7 p.m. mazuva ose. Munokwanisa kutibata pa 909 medium wave frequency, pa 4930 shortwave, 15580 shortwave, ne 6080 shortwave mazuva ose. Musakangana kuti tichangezve tichitepfenyura pa Facebook page yedu ye VOA Shona. Kana musati mafarira Facebook page yedu, ibvai maenda ikoko motsvaga pakanzi like mubva matifarira. Tokuyeuchidzai zvakare zvirongwa izvi zvinenge zvichiitwa na 6 a.m., 2 p.m. na 7 p.m. manheru ega ega. Musakanganwe.
Some Zimbabweans living outside of their country have taken the government to court, seeking the diaspora's right to take a part in planned elections. Chief Justice Luke Malaba has said the matter will be heard by a full bench at a date to be determined. Sebastian Mofu has more for VOA from Harare.
ahead of a Thursday hearing at the Constitutional Court. Visiting President Emmerson Mnangagwa told Zimbabweans in neighboring Mozambique to come home and register to vote in elections, which he said will be held in the next 5 months. But exiled Zimbabweans want to be able to vote from where they are. One of them is United Kingdom-based Ruvimbo Chigwedere, who is bitter that Mnangagwa's government says it has no money to help Zimbabweans vote.
We saw it coming. It will take a long time anyway. It's not about money. It is about my policies. We are an enemy of the state, and that will take a long time to change. We are counted when it benefits, but when it comes to the proper benefit for us, we don't really matter.
Zimbabweans living abroad sent home about $750 million, according to Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe estimates. Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights filed the petition to allow the diaspora to vote. Diplomats are the only Zimbabweans outside the country who can currently cast ballots. As many as 3 million people are left unable to vote. Zimbabwe Electoral Commission Acting Chairperson Emmanuel Magade says his organization is not to blame for that.
Our position as VEC is that we would want every eligible Zimbabwean to vote, but everything has to be done in accordance with the law. As of now, people in the diaspora are ineligible to vote. It's incumbent, or it behoves upon the parliamentary parties to change the law. We are in servitude of the law. We will follow the law dutifully and faithfully.
It remains to be seen whether Parliament or the Constitutional Court will change the law in time for the next elections. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Njani matabezulu, linjani zulu kandaba. Sifisa ukulibikela ukuthi silethulela indaba ezimqotho ngeZimbabwe suku zonke ngo 6 a.m., 2 p.m. la ngo 7 p.m. eZimbabwe. Lisibamba kumakakasi ati 909 Mita Mwave, 4930, 15580 laku 6080 shortwave frequencies. Lila kunjalo ukusithola ebulenjini bokuzilibazisa ku Facebook ukhasi lethule VOA Ndebele. Land of sunshine.
African nations saw big political changes in 2017, with the departure of leaders who had been in office for decades. That change, however, obscured continuing trends of abuse of rights and civil liberties, Human Rights Watch says in its annual Global Human Rights Report today. From Johannesburg, VOA's Anita Powell has the story.
Africa doesn't take top billing in the latest roundup of global human rights concerns. That dubious honor goes to what Human Rights Watch calls the dangerous trend of intolerance and populist leadership in the United States, Russia, and China. But, says Human Rights Watch's Deputy Program Director Babatunde Olugboji, that doesn't mean the watchdog is taking its eye off Africa.
Women who have been raped, people who have been killed, people who have been arrested, people who have been detained, they're not going to be thinking about nuclear war in North Korea or in Hawaii or anywhere. They're going to be thinking of, my government has the responsibility to respect my rights. My government has a responsibility to ensure that I enjoy these rights.
Olugboji and colleagues described concerns in West Africa, such as the bloody insurgency by Boko Haram, the crackdown on the English-speaking minority in Cameroon, and unrest in the Democratic Republic of Congo, which has repeatedly postponed elections. In East Africa, they noted clampdowns on dissent in Ethiopia and Tanzania, and concerns about election-related violence in Kenya, along with the continued war in South Sudan. Researchers, however, noted bright spots in Gambia and in Angola, where longtime leaders finally stepped aside and freedoms are slowly, possibly, growing. Angola researchers Anita Machado says that while things appear to be going well since longtime leader José Eduardo dos Santos retired in September, it's too soon to call the Southern African nation a success. She said most of the year was characterized by dos Santos's repressive leadership and his family's ever-increasing wealth.
It was an exciting period in Angola. It's been since September. But it's also important not to forget that the year was still there from January until September 2017 when changes began to be implemented or began to be seen. The majority of 2017 wasn't a good year for Angola.
Oligboji said that rights groups are reserving judgment about Zimbabwe, where the military forced President Robert Mugabe to resign in November after 37 years in power. Mugabe's longtime deputy, Emmerson Mnangagwa, replaced him.
Not much has changed in Zimbabwe. There was this euphoria about Mugabe being pushed out, but when the dust settled, it became clear that these people that have been there forever, I bet again, nothing has changed. There are restrictive laws in the books. There are issues around freedom of expression. The press is not free. People cannot protest.
African governments, he says, may feel the heat is off them because of the world's bigger, louder, more controversial leaders. But, he says, Human Rights Watch is always observing. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Finance and Economic Planning Minister Patrick Chinamasa denies reports that bond notes will be phased out, saying they will remain in circulation until Zimbabwe can introduce its own currency. Many took to social media to explain.
Tawanda Shaya says, Mr. Minister, bond notes or new currency won't help the economy. It's simple economics. If we are importing almost everything, there is no need to have a Zimbabwean dollar because it will be the same garbage.
Chris Navio says, the best thing the government can do is to bite the bullet and say no to fake farmers and businessmen in the name of indigenization. Do away with all policies hurting the economy.
Fanuel Chumo says, please push out the bond note from the financial systems. Are you seeing the suffering you're bringing to the lives of the ordinary people? Adopt the rand in the system.
Martin Sibanda says, suffering continues. This useless government must be kicked out.
Eddie Kandansa says, bond notes are hurting us more than sanctions.
Lakmo Mushonga says, in simple terms, he is saying high rates will continue forever.
You're listening to Zimbabwe Today, live from Voice of America Studio 22. I'm Kutsunai Mutetwa in Washington, D.C. At 42 past the hour, we continue with the news. 48 former U.S. ambassadors to African countries have sent a letter to the White House expressing deep concern over President Donald Trump's reported derogatory comments referring to African nations. In part, the letter said, as former U.S. ambassadors to 48 African countries, we write to express our deep concern regarding reports of your recent remarks about African countries and to attest to the importance of our partnerships with most of the 54 African nations. The letter went on to praise entrepreneurs, artists, activists, conservationists, and educators from the continent, while also stressing the importance of maintaining good relations between the United States and 54 African nations. And at an event marking additional health care funding to Zimbabwe yesterday, the U.S. Ambassador to Zimbabwe, Harry Thomas Jr., said that the American people have tremendous respect for Zimbabwe, for Africa, its people, culture, and traditions. He said African immigrants are high-achieving people, and he added that we have nothing but respect for you, and we welcome you to our shores as visitors or as residents.
A spokesman for Kenya's president, Uhuru Kenyatta, has warned opposition leader Raila Odinga not to carry through on threats to inaugurate himself as the people's president or to form a rival government in exile. Odinga, who disputes the October presidential election results, vowed to VOA's Swahili service this week he could conduct an inauguration ceremony. He will conduct an inauguration ceremony on January 30th and form a government either inside or outside of Kenya. VOA's Daniel Shirv reports from Nairobi.
Kenya's presidential spokesman, Eric Karaithe, on Thursday responded to opposition leader Raila Odinga's threat to form a government in exile with a warning.
Acts against the Kenyan law, done either within or outside the country, will be treated accordingly. We have systems to deal with actions. When done outside the country, they are treated as actions of aggression against Kenya. When done within the country, we have the criminal law.
Odinga's National Super Alliance has rejected the results of October's rerun election and defiantly pledged to inaugurate him as the people's president on January 30th. In an exclusive interview with VOA's Swahili service Tuesday, Odinga repeated the swearing-in plan and raised the possibility of forming a government. He said an illegitimate government is in office, but the people's government is out of office, and we will work as a government. We will appoint a cabinet. It can be a government in exile, that is, out of the country. It has happened in other countries, said Odinga. But us, we are saying Kenyans will not accept to be governed by an illegitimate government that wasn't voted for by the people. A press release from Odinga's political party, the Orange Democratic Movement, tried to walk back his comments on forming a government in exile. According to the ODM, Odinga said he would only take such a move if authorities tried to stop his swearing-in ceremony. VOA's Swahili service maintains the opposition leader made no such comments during the interview. The 73-year-old Odinga did hint that his inauguration plan could change if Kenyatta's ruling Jubilee Party agrees to talks.
If we cannot talk by 30th of October, of January, we are going to be sworn in. And we will then release our program thereafter.
Presidential spokesman Karaithe on Thursday repeated that the president was open to dialogue on development issues, such as land ownership, health care, and water, but not on the legitimacy of his government.
The dialogue the government has insisted on is that it must be based on the law and the constitution.
Odinga told VOA that he was not interested in talking to Kenyatta about his development agenda. Kenya was plunged into political crisis when the Supreme Court voided the August election results and Odinga and his supporters boycotted a second round in October. Kenyatta was declared the winner with 98% of the vote, but low voter turnout of 39% led many to question if he had a mandate to lead. Kenya's attorney general warned in December that if Odinga declares himself president, it could be considered treason, a charge punishable by death. Daniel Scherf, VOA News, Nairobi.
Yesterday, the Ethiopian government began releasing more than 500 political prisoners. Among them is Merera Gudina, a leader of the Oromo Federalist Congress, one of the country's largest opposition groups. Gudina was detained more than a year ago on his arrival in Addis Ababa from a trip to Brussels. He had just testified in the European Parliament about the human rights and political situation in Ethiopia. Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn earlier this month announced that some politicians jailed on criminal charges would be released and pardoned in a bid to widen Ethiopia's political space. Human rights organizations estimate that at least 4,000 political prisoners are behind bars currently in Ethiopia. Gudina spoke yesterday with VOA's Horn of Africa service about his release and hopes for the future.
I'm very glad that I'm out. Especially, I'm very much happy about the huge turnout that especially the youth, the way the youth received me. It was a very big reception. They received me the Oromo way or the African or the Ethiopian way by killing an oxen and several sheep or lamb. Mm-hmm. So very joyful and ceremonial. That signals to us that people like me should continue the struggle.
Gudina says he sees his welcome reception as a sign that many people want him to stay engaged in politics. But he says that decision is not his alone.
I hope I will continue to make my own contribution. But the major decision should be made by the party and by the leadership of the party. In the days to come, we'll discuss about things, about the way this country is going, the direction this country is taking. That will be decided by the party, not by me alone.
The opposition leader says for now he has just a few major goals for his party and the government.
Two things. One is that the government should continue to deepen the national consensus. That should release the rest of the political prisoners now left behind. And should work really for a new Ethiopia, a new Ethiopia we all wish to see.
That was Ethiopian opposition leader Merera Gudina, who spoke with VOA's Horn of Africa service today, a day after he was released from prison.
Member states participating in a UN review of Burundi's human rights record have accused the Central African government of wide-scale abuse, including extrajudicial killings, torture, sexual violence, and the repression of freedom of expression. Burundi is one of 14 states under examination in the UN Human Rights Council's Universal Periodic Review. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the meeting in Geneva.
This is the third time Burundi has been examined under the Universal Periodic Review, a unique process that scrutinizes the human rights records of all 193 UN member states. As a veteran of the practice, Burundi was well prepared to present its human rights situation in a good light and to deflect criticism of its actions. Martin Nivyabandi, Burundi's Minister of Human Rights, Social Affairs and Gender, described the progress in his country since its last UN review in 2013. Nivyabandi said major reforms have been made to promote and protect human rights, including addressing human trafficking, protecting victims of gender violence, and reducing prison overcrowding. He fended off criticism of impunity by noting many bills have been passed to prevent such action. He said steps are being taken to make sure victims of human rights violations receive assistance. He spoke through an interpreter.
We've set up a department providing legal aid, not providing access to a lawyer so much as providing advice on and orienting individuals and to make sure that a defense is guaranteed and make sure that everybody's rights are upheld.
Not everyone was persuaded by the arguments. The head of the U.S. delegation, Jason Mack, expressed dismay at the continued threats against U.N. personnel by government officials and ruling party members.
We are deeply troubled by continued restrictions on political and civic space for members of the opposition, independent media, and civil society. A credible electoral process cannot take place without improvements in the rights to freedom of peaceful assembly and association and freedom of expression.
Burundi has suspended all cooperation and collaboration with the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. It also has refused to grant access to the UN Commission of Inquiry to investigate rights abuses. Many member states at the hearing called on Burundi to reverse these decisions. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Tanzania's government has deregistered an explosives-laden Libya-bound ship flying the country's flag when it was seized by Greek authorities earlier this month. The government says it will also take a closer look at ships being registered in the East African country. Mohamed Yusuf has the story from Nairobi, with reporting by Khalid Abubakar in Dar es Salaam.
Speaking to reporters Thursday at the presidential palace, Tanzanian Vice President Samia Hassan said her government will revoke the license of the ship involved in transporting the explosives and another ship caught transporting cocaine. We are taking the first step to deregister these ships and we are demanding them to pull down our flags from the ships so that they can face the law. Last week, Greek authorities intercepted the vessel carrying the explosives. The cargo papers showed the material were destined for Djibouti, but according to the reports, Greek inspectors found the cargo was bound for Libya. In 2011, the United Nations Security Council imposed an arms embargo on Libya. 3 weeks earlier, another ship flying the Tanzanian flag was intercepted in the Caribbean. The cargo tanker was carrying 1.6 tons of cocaine. Maritime expert Julius Nkuhula says vessels from the East African nation now will be a target. There is no problem registering ships in Tanzania or another country. It is a good business if it is handled well. Now, Tanzania will not be getting such businesses from ships, because ships with Tanzanian flags will be targeted. It is up to maritime agencies to do something about it, like monitoring of all the ships. Vice President Hassan says the government will keep closer watch on ships being registered in the country. We have decided to review our laws. Some of these people are running away from their countries because they have strict laws. For us, we have decided to review and strengthen our laws so that we can nab those coming to register such vessels in our country. Tanzania is one of the 7 countries being investigated by the United Nations for violating arms embargo against North Korea. The U.S. has put pressure on Tanzania and 4 other African countries to stop allowing North Korean ships to fly their flags. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
That is it for us this evening on VOA's Zimbabwe Today. I'm Chidonjeri.
And I'm Katarai Mutetwa. We'll be back again tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for the latest news and analysis in English. VOA Shona and Dabele broadcast can be heard at 7 a.m., 2 p.m., and 7 p.m. Zimbabwe time.
Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Ndebele and VOA Shona, as well as our VOA website, www.studio7news.com. And we leave you with a song by the Destruction Boys.
Are you going there? Ho!
Thank you.